It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Strike one. Strike two.
Welcome back to Major League Baseball. Sort of.
Now, the Baseball Reporters Offseason Podcast with Tony Mass.
Welcome into the Baseball Reporters Podcast. Before I get to this week's topic, let me just remind you, each week you can listen to the Baseball Reporters Podcast on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5thesportshub app. While you're there, be sure to check out all the other original podcasts from Boston's Home for Sports. You can also find all of these at bpodstudios.com and at all the usual places, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, podcast, what have you. When we began this podcast, when we decided to do this podcast during the offseason, the idea was the Red Sox would be breaking news, and from time to time we'd have things to talk about and touch on. We had no idea that they would do nothing, and in fact go so far as to fire their manager, and we'll get to that at some point too. We did a lot of that on the Felger and Mazz show, so I don't want to revisit a lot of that here. And certainly when the Red Sox hire a new manager, we'll get to that. But I did... It occurred to me this week, I've been a Hall of Fame voter for a number of years now, closing in on, I think, about 15 years. And this year's nominees, or this year's inductees, will be Derek Jeter and Larry Walker, both of whom were announced as winners in the election held in December at the end of last year, but announced earlier this week. And then something struck me, listening to the announcements of those guys. Approval, or you know, what's the right word I'm looking for? Induction's the wrong word, but entrance into the Hall of Fame, having been elected in. And which brings me to this. Derek Jeter, sitting in a sofa with his family, when he received the call from the Hall of Fame. Here it is.
Hello.
Hello, may I speak with Derek Jeter, please?
This is Derek.
DJ, it's Jack O'Connell in New York.
Jack, how are you?
I'm doing well, and you're going to be doing well in about 2 seconds. Baseball writers have elected you to the Hall of Fame. Congratulations.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you.
All right. All right.
I appreciate it. Jack, you know what? I always look forward to seeing you and hearing your voice, but for selfish reasons... your voice sounds a little bit better today.
Well, I told you 5 years ago I've been making this call, and I kept my promise.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate it.
Today, Derek Jeter joins a distinguished list of Yankee greats in taking his rightful place in the Hall of Fame. One of the most respected ball players of his generation, he opened his career as the American League Rookie of the Year in 1996. He went on to become a five-time World Series champion. Derek, congratulations and welcome to Cooperstown. We'll see you in July.
Okay, so that was obviously from earlier this week. And the voice you heard, that's obviously Derek Jeter learning that he has been voted into the Hall of Fame. He'll be inducted in a ceremony this coming summer, along with Larry Walker, a longtime outfielder for the Montreal Expos, Colorado Rockies. You know all that stuff. But what I thought would be interesting today is... to tell you who the voice is on the other end of the line. So if you're a baseball fan and you read about the Hall of Fame stuff, you know that players like Jeter wait for a phone call that they get shortly after 6 o'clock on the day that voting results are announced. And there is always a voice on the other end of the line that says, Derek, this is Jack O'Connell of the Baseball Writers Association calling. Okay, I thought it might be nice to actually talk to Jack O'Connell, who joins us now here on the Baseball Reporters podcast. So, Jack, why don't you tell people just quickly a little bit about yourself, how long you've been covering baseball, and what your role is with the Writers Association.
Tony, Matt, it's good to talk to you again.
As always.
And good morning, everyone. Well, I covered my first baseball game in 1969, believe it or not. But I've been a regular day-to-day beat guy. That began in 1980 when I was covering the Mets for the Bergen Record in New Jersey. I later covered the Yankees for both the Daily News in New York and the Harper Current. And I've been the Secretary Treasurer of the Baseball Writers Association of America since 1995. And my first election was that year when Mike Schmidt was elected. He was the first player I called to notify him of his election. And I called Larry Walker and Derek Jeter Tuesday. And that makes 49 that I've called in the last 25 years.
So that's what I was going to ask you, Jack. How many guys have you called? And you just said 49. So you've called, you have been the bearer of good news, which is very unusual for the media, because typically we typically we deliver bad news. That's right.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, Phil Negro, who was the second person I called, he nicknamed me the voice of heaven. I don't know anybody with as thick a New York accent as mine has ever been called the voice of heaven, but I'll take it.
Absolutely.
I'll take it.
So look, of all the guys you've called, like, do you make a list of all the guys you've called?
Well, I know who the 49 are. I mean, I've got it memorized.
Do you
I know each and every one. I know each and every one.
And do you remember specific conversations with each? Because the obvious question I have for you is, you know, does any one particular conversation or moment stand out? And I imagine Jeter has to be one of those because you covered his whole career.
Yeah, well, it's true. I covered his entire career. I covered the entire career of Mariano Rivera when he went in last year. I think there is something a little bit special when it's a player you covered. I covered Wade Boggs. I covered Dave Winfield, Gary Carter. But I must tell you, I treat each call exactly the same because I know it's important to that person on the other end. And so they're all special in a way. You know, there's a link too, Tony, in these calls. Here are these players who are great players, had great careers. Some of them rambunctious, some of them obnoxious, some of them, you know, were really wild and crazy guys. But on that phone call, the one emotion I get from every single call is humility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one says, oh, well, thanks for the call. See you tomorrow. They really become overwhelmed. I think if anybody saw any of the video of Larry Walker's call, for example, you know, you saw him tear up. And I'll tell you, he's not the first guy to cry. Here are these big, tough guys, you know, people like Don Sutton, George Brett, Tony Gwynn, Ozzie Smith, and they just burst out in tears. It's from my side of the phone, it's quite a thing to hear. And that's the link in all of these calls. One of the wildest calls involved a guy who played for the Red Sox and is still very much involved in Boston baseball, and that's my friend Dennis Eckersley. He was so nervous because he told me he didn't sleep for 3 days.
You know, I'm sure, yeah.
About whether he's going to get this call or not. And when I finally reached him, something went wrong with his phone. I don't know whether the fax went on or something like that. And it made this loud, piercing shrill. And I'm shouting, we were at the Waldorf then, and I was shouting as loud as I could. I must have woke up the guy in the next room. And I finally said, check the ID, check the caller ID, call that number. And Dennis is screaming back at me, okay, I'll call. So he was the only guy that had to call me to find out. So we had to do it backwards. And that was one of the wildest calls I made. But like I said, and then he said to me something, and he's right about this. He said, how do people like Jim Rice and Bruce Sutter and Bert Blyleven, who, you know, took so many years, how do they do this every year? Because he said, if I had to wait 2 or 3 more years, he said, I'd have gone right out of my mind.
Right, because you're right. Some of those guys spend, as you noted, in the case of Rice, back then you were on the ballot for 15 years if you got enough votes to stay on, and Rice went right down to the 15th year. Those guys literally, that never occurred to me, Jack, that those guys sit by the phone, and maybe not for 14 years because their voting totals the first number of years are low, but they sit by the phone for a call that never comes. Like, that never occurred to me.
Yes. And I remember when I called Jim, we talked about that. He was so gracious about it, because I said to him, I said, you know, I wish we could have made this call sooner. He said, well, you made it now, and that's what counts. He was sitting watching a favorite soap opera. He was very, very, very quiet, very comfortable. But somebody like a Phil Negro, a Don Sutton, you know, these are guys you might say, hey, they had a chance to be first ballot. And they sat by that phone 4 or 5 years. I remember Negro telling me he had the very first year was on the ballot. He had packed a bag. He was prepared to make the flight to New York for the press conference, and he didn't get the call. He did the same thing the next year. He said, by the fourth year, I decided, you know what, for the fifth year, I'm not going to pack this bag. And that turned out to be the year that we made the call. So, you know, somebody like Bruce Sutter, he's another one. I think we got him on the 13th year.
Right.
And, I hope I can say this on the podcast, but
yeah, say whatever you want. If it's bad, we'll bleep it out later.
Well, he had one of the great reactions because he waited so long, and he just I gave him the information, I congratulated him, and we chatted a little bit, and then he just said, "Now wait a minute, Jack, you're not me, are you?" So I said, "No, it's legit." Another crazy one was another guy associated with the Red Sox, Wade Boggs.
No surprise Jack, yeah.
No surprise, right? And I covered Boggs for 5 years when he was here with the Yankees. And I knew him well, and he's one of my favorite Hall of Famers. He's the first guy I see in Cooperstown every year. We spent a lot of time together. But when I called, apparently a friend of his, and he needs better friends than this, I told him this, somebody had called him about an hour before our call, and pretended to be me,
which is hard to do, Jack.
Yeah. So when I called, he was very he questioned everything, you know. Oh yeah, and he was very mad. I said, Bonzi, it's me, it's Jackie O. I'm telling you, you're in the Hall of Fame, and Jane Forbes Clark, who's the board chairman of the Hall of Fame, was sitting right next to me. And when I'm finished giving the information and talking to the person, I then turn the phone over to her, and she officially welcomes the player into the Hall of Fame. So I said, all right, calm down. Do you know who Jane Forbes Clark is? Of course I do. She's supposed to be on this call. I said, well, I'm going to put her on the call now. So I told him, though, and I've told him this since then, you need better friends if somebody's going to pull, something like that.
Well, for sure. Look, and again, so you covered a lot of these guys. I'm going to ask you a couple of follow-ups. First of all, you said one of those years, was it the Eck year? You said you were at the Waldorf. Are you always at the Waldorf on the day the balloting is announced? Is that part of the routine?
Well, we've moved around a little bit. We were at the Waldorf for quite a few years. Originally, I made the call myself. I think we were at the Sheraton. And then in 2001, when Jane officially became the board chairman, I asked her to, we were at the Waldorf then, and I asked her to be a part of the call, to come on. I thought that was appropriate. It really works out well, because then she can officially welcome them to Cooperstown, the Hall of Fame family. We have since, and we used to do it just from a hotel room, but we have since, she has the Clark Estate. The Clark Estates has a building, in a building on 48th Street in Manhattan. And she's got this large conference room there. And I'm going to say maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we decided to do it from there. It's a great place to work. It's a big TV. We can watch the MLB network coverage. And it's quieter. I mean, one time, I've trying to remember who we were calling. I think it was Cal Ripken Jr. And the maid walked in while I was in the middle of the call. You know, she's got the vacuum cleaner and everything. So we moved from the Waldorf now to the St. Regis Hotel the last 4 or 5 years for the press conference because the Waldorf is going renovation. And St. Regis is one of her favorite places. So we're there now. But the call now is made from the from the boardroom, the workroom at her offices there on in Midtown. It's comfortable. It's comfortable. And we don't speakerphone it. I mean, I talk to them directly and then just hand it up a real kind of old-fashioned way. And, you know, now, apparently, as you see every year, a lot of these people tape the calls.
Right.
You know, originally that was not the case. You just had a regular phone call. I think the first person who taped it was Winfield.
Uh-huh.
And that would have been 2001. But we tell them, look, you know, we call about anywhere from maybe a half hour to 40 minutes before the actual announcement. We tell them, look, you got to try and keep it in the family because when the announcement's not for another half hour or so. And we have not had a leak. They respect the idea of the Hall of Fame so much that, you know, they do keep it to themselves. And particularly in this day and age where you can just get your thumbs out and spread the news.
Don't you love that, Jack, that everything's instantaneous now?
It's unbelievable. I remember because the only time we had a leak, it involved Don Sutton. It wasn't really his fault. In fact, he was on a golf course. He was on the 17th green of some golf course down in Georgia. And I reached him, and I think it was about an hour before the announcement. I said, you know, so do me a favor, just keep it in the family for the next hour. We'll have the announcement. So he calls his wife, and, you know, he tells her, and she's all excited. And he says, by the way, I told Jack I wouldn't say anything for the next hour. You know, I promised him. And she said, well, I didn't promise him. So
she flapped her game. It's always the wife.
She blabbed it all over the place, and then the Dodgers thought, I guess they were planning a press conference, you know, to announce it. They thought the announcement had already been made. So, you know, that's the only leak we've had. And I can't fault Sutton. He kept his promise. But so I had to be a lot more explicit and specific about it the next few years. But that was 3 years ago, we haven't had a leak since.
Yeah, well, Jack, again, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. First of all, it's always the wife who screws it up. Always. In everything. As you know, the wives just can't keep their mouths shut. I mean, it's just part of the thing, Jack. And secondly, I have no doubt, having known you for a long time, you know, and I would call us contemporaries, but I don't think that's fair to you because you've obviously done this a lot longer than I have, that I can totally see you being explicit. Because I've seen you in action, and I know when you get mad, Jack, that you can be very explicit. So, and that's okay. I mean, I think it's one of your more charming qualities. In fact, I would describe you as authentic. So, well, look, but again, you know, and that's all anybody ever wants, right, is you want sort of the real thing. And I watched the Jeter call, and I do kind of like watching that moment. I think it's a cool moment. Jeter's there with his family. The phone rings, and obviously, you know, you knew him as a player, and I have to think, I know that you're trying to play it straight, that all 49 guys who've gotten in that you have informed of their induction or election into the Hall of Fame, I don't doubt that you try to treat them all the same, because it's equally important, every one of those guys. But this one had to be special for you, right? This guy's a different cat. I mean, I say to me, you know, I'm obviously here in Boston. I think Red Sox fans have a great respect and appreciation for Jeter. But to me, as a pro and as a complete player, he was never a 40 home run guy. As you know, he was never a 30 home run guy. But Jeter had enough power to hurt you if he made a mistake. Right. And he could bunt. He could hit and run. He could play defense. He was good in the clutch. He was better in October than he was the rest of the time. And he was damn good the rest of the time. To me, I put him in that category of one of my favorite players of all time. The guy that I would hold up to kids to say, this is how you play the game. Right. And I put sort of Alomar in that group, George Brett in that group, Barry Larkin, you know, Griffey's an easy one. But this is a long way for me to say this had to be a special call for you, Jack. It had to be.
Well, I can't deny that. You know, Derek Jeter, one of the great qualities about him, and he shares it with you know, a lot of the Hall of Famers, he elevated the games of the people around him. And I think that was one of his great qualities. I've known Derek since he came to his first major league camp, which I'm thinking was 1995. We had a good relationship over the years. And, you know, he was a tough guy to get to know. He really, I mean, he put up a facade in front of the press. He answered all the questions, but he, you know, it's hard to get it. But he and I, for some reason, we just hit it off. And I was able to, you know, in later years when he became particularly aloof with some of the younger reporters, the dynamic changed a little bit, but not with me. I mean, it was just, it was a good relationship over the years.
He trusted you, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I guess things about him I know that a lot of people don't. I mean, we did have that kind of a relationship. And I saw him last year, you know, he came up to, he and Georgie Posada, came up from Miami to come to Mariano's induction. And I hadn't seen him in 4 years, and he shot right across the room, he and George. I was sitting with my daughter and her husband, you know, up at the Otisaga, a dining room there. He shot right across the room and came over. I thought my daughter was, going to pass out. But we did. We did have a good relationship. I'm not going to lie. It was a special call yesterday. And it's funny because I... The last time I spoke to him at Yankee Stadium on his last game, actually it was before the game where he had that great hit and everything. And I just wanted to, I want to grab you before the game to say, look, I want to thank you for everything over the years. I wish you a great retirement. Good luck. And by the way, I'll be speaking to you by phone in about 5 years. He just looked at me and said, don't start that now.
Sure.
I want to talk about the Hall of Fame. But so I said to him yesterday, I said, I promised you that I would be making this call in 5 years, and I kept my promise. So, yeah, yesterday's call and last year's call to Mariano were very, very special. These are the first two players I called who I covered from day one to the last day of each of their careers. And so these two, yeah, they do stick out. I was really nervous about both of them. I certainly don't want to screw this up. But you know what happens is, when you have a relationship with a player like that, the minute you hear the voice, you're comfortable again. You can just speak casually. Those are probably two of the most casual conversations I've had. Whereas someone like Larry, who I only knew as an opposing player when I was covering the National League, you know, it was a little bit different. But he was so so emotional that it was very easy to chat with him. It's you know what? It's an important day. It's a very important. I've had some players say this is like when I first found out I was a father, you know.
Sure.
You know, the day I got engaged, or, you know, some important thing that happened in life. I don't know how many people of those people have told me this is one of the great moments of my life, and I'll never forget that call. I mentioned Nico earlier.
But I
recognize that so that when I make the call, I know what this is. I know that this is an important thing. That's why I don't do anything silly. I don't make any jokes. I mean, Larry Walker yesterday or a few days ago had set out a tweet. I'm not on Twitter, so I just saw this on.
You're
on
a smart TV. Man, Jack. Yeah, you're smart enough to be. Yeah, keep going.
I want to be able to get through the day without thinking I'm a real jerk, because that's what people are writing on Twitter. But he tweeted out, I think I'm going to fall short again, but I want to thank everybody and blah, blah, blah for their support. So when I got him on the phone and I introduced myself and I said, I just want you to know you didn't fall short this time, you know, and that's when he lost it, because he knew that what I
heard
was that he made it. So, That's probably as light as I've ever been, but I thought that would be a good way to get into it, and it worked. I mean, his reaction was terrific, and I'm also representing all of you guys and girls, all the people that voted. I don't want to let you people down.
Yeah, you're more dignified than most of us, Jack. You're more dignified than most of us. So, look, there's a few more things I want to ask you. We're a little pressed for time, yes. So I want to try to keep them concise if we could. Okay? And again, you don't have to get into specifics, and don't tell me anything you don't want to tell. I don't want to put you in that kind of spot. So, those 49 guys that you've called over the years, has there ever been a guy you've had to call that you dealt with as a player and you thought, you know what? I hate this guy. I can't stand this guy. I find him annoying. And yet I have to call and tell him that he's in the Hall of Fame. Have you ever had that experience?
I must say no. The closest thing, and it turned out to be maybe the most poignant call I made, was Eddie Murray. And the minute I say that name, you know what we're talking about.
Of course, yes.
He had a terrible relationship with the press. Terrible. And I was so concerned about this that the year before, when Ozzie Smith was elected, and Dave Winfield and Kirby Puckett had come to New York that day. So I had the three of them in the room, and Ozzie grew up with Eddie. And I said, look, next year Eddie has a very good shot at going in. But I don't want him to not answer the phone because it's a writer calling. So Ozzie said, look, I want Eddie to have the same kind of day that you three guys have.
Sure.
So I leaned on them to say, you know, so what happened, this is very quickly. I got Eddie Murray in a limousine that was taken to the funeral of his sister. His sister had died a few days earlier. He had been, you know, he'd been the guy with her all down to the end. Mm-hmm. But that morning, he just lost it. And so he turned his phone off.
Yeah.
But I had a phone number for his wife. And when I called her, and I introduced myself as Jack O'Connell with the baseball rights, she said, oh, we have no statement to make today. I said, no. This has something to do with something else. I think your husband wants to take this call. And then I could hear him say, hey, let me have it.
So he knew.
And then I told him and I said, look, I know what you're going through today. We'll talk in a few more days. We canceled the press conference for tomorrow and maybe we'll see you in a week or so. And he just said, thank you. And so this call I was so worried about turned out to be one of the most, it was the most poignant call that I made. Then I saw him a week later and, you know, people change when they get in the Hall of Fame. And he's been a whole different person. But that was the one, in answer to your original question, that was the one that worried me the most. It turned out to be one of the best ones.
Yeah, we're all people underneath the outside, right, Jack? I mean, you know, yeah. Okay, so the second question I have, and again, this might be a yes or no answer. There are a lot of guys who are borderline that don't get called. As you said, there are guys who sit in front of the phone for years before they get the call. Do you call those guys after the fact or to tell them that they didn't get in or how close they are? Or does that not happen?
No.
There's no phone call at all on those guys?
I believe that John Shostakovsky, who you know, and before him, Brad Horn and Jeff Iles, people in that job, vice presidents, they phoned them.
Gotcha.
I remember Brad calling Craig Biggio when he missed by two votes, and I know Chester yesterday talked to Kurt Schilling.
Okay,
but I was told you just call the winner, and you know it was interesting. I was working with the Hartford Current in 1997 and 1996 when we had the bullet ballot where nobody got elected, and Phil Niekro had gotten the most votes that year, and my office said, "Look, we're going to need a Niekro quote." I said, "You understand? I can't call him." So I had my friend Claire Smith, who knew Nuxie well, I said, if you talk to him, he'll float me a quote. But no, I don't call the, I'm prepared. I have phone numbers of several people.
Gotcha.
We had Schilling's number, and we're going to keep it because it looks good for him next year. But no, we don't, I only call the people that make it.
Yeah, I was just wondering how those guys get informed. And just as a quick note, John Shostakovsky, who you mentioned, used to work for the Red Sox, now works for the Hall of Fame. Yeah. He called Schilling. Idelson used to be these are Hall of Fame employees who are involved in the process. Last question, then I got to let you go. We got to keep it tight. Over the years, you know, the game's changed a lot. Players make more money. There are a lot of variables. Do you sense, and again, if we just try to keep it tight, if you could, do you sense that the Hall of Fame still means to players today what it did, you know, 25 years ago?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's okay. It's exact same emotion. There's no doubt. This is the special place. You don't have to say Baseball Hall of Fame. Just say Hall of Fame, and everybody's first thing they think of.
I agree, Jack. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Listen, I want to
feel that, and Tony Mash, the players feel that way. I mean, believe me, I see it. I see it the next day when they come in and we have a little brunch before the presser. Believe me, the guys today feel the same way
that Joe DiMaggio and the rest of the other people, Ted Williams, thought.
Jack, listen, I can't thank you enough for your time. And again, I just thought it was a nice opportunity for people to understand who the voice on the other end of the call was, right? That to me was, they always, it's the same guy every year. They're like, who the hell is that guy? And I thought that was a good, I thought it was a good opportunity to talk to you. So I appreciate your time.
Great to talk to you again, Tony Mass. Thank you very much for the invitation.
All right, Jack, be well. Okay, I'll talk to you later. So our thanks to Jack for joining us. And again, just a reminder, each week you can listen to the Baseball Reporters Podcast on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com, as well as on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. And while you're there, check out all the other original podcasts from Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub, and you can also find all these at bpodstudios.com, at Apple Podcasts, at Google Podcasts, the usual places. Our thanks again to Roger Moore and John Riley. Thanks for listening.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing. And FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks. And all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.